Welcome back to Mornings, everyone. I'm Scott Juvette alongside Lori Allen.
And we are talking to Callie Schneiders.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it a year ago that we visited Callie and Elizabeth Schneiders?
I think it was
right?
August, yeah.
And we're talking about the book.
Yeah, and her book is You're Not My Mom, Confessions of a Formerly Wicked Stepmother. Now, Callie, you're going to be with us this whole hour and take us through an amazing story of love and loss and recovery. But let's start at the beginning. You met and fell in love with a widower who had a little girl.
That's right.
Good morning, Callie.
Good morning, Scott. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Yes, I did. I was waiting for my prince to come, and he did. The slipper fit the foot, and I married Larry, but the little princess already living in his castle was none too excited about me coming on board.
And it was a struggle for the first few years.
First few years, it was a struggle for 10.
Struggle or a war? What?
Well, war is really a much better word, Scott. Yes, we were certainly locked in a battle, and each of us fighting our own little fight, and it kind of felt like a tug of war with Larry in the middle, and I finally, it took me 10 years to figure out that the best way to win some tugs of war is to simply turn loose of the rope.
Mm. Well, tell us how you got through it. I know it was a lot of prayer, but those 10 years after that, you actually had a nice relationship with Elizabeth.
Yes, and that really is the point of the book. We became the best of friends, and because of where we started, which was the worst of enemies, we thought maybe we had some things to share, some things that I had learned, which I share at the back of each chapter in sort of bullet point form. But the chapter really is the story that a reader often finds themselves in similar scenarios. And then Elizabeth adds her voice from her diaries from when she was little, so we know exactly what she was thinking and feeling at the time. And it can give a struggling step-parent some insights into the thoughts and feelings of children that they can see playing out in behaviors that baffle them.
You know, Callie, I mean, when you think of 10 years that the two of you were just at each other's throat, you know, what kept you from just throwing in the towel?
Well, there's really only one thing that did keep me there, and that was God. I believed that I had made a commitment to Him on my wedding day, as well as to Larry and Elizabeth. And sometimes when I would have been tempted to break the promise to Larry and Elizabeth, I was not willing to break the promise to God. And that really did keep me there many times when I didn't want to stay.
Boy, that's inspiring,
yeah,
isn't it, Lori?
Yeah,
I mean,
and,
wow.
But the statistics are amazing about step-parents who give up.
Oh, it's depressing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you stop and think that 90 million people in the U.S. today are in one way or another involved in a step-family, and that one in three in their lifetime will be, whether that's a step-parent, a step-child, or a step-relative, and yet the sad statistic that you're referring to, Lori, is that two-thirds of all of the step-families will not make it. And I think there's some really good reasons why that happens, and that's why we tried to share, Elizabeth and I, why we felt it was worth it in the long run and what our ideas are that we hope might help somebody else to keep their commitment strong.
Well, Callie, I was going to ask you, where did the breakthrough come?
Well, you know, really, it happened what I call one mini miracle at a time. And it was not a specific day. It was really about sticking with it and until finally you just wear them down. and I, you know, I say you just keep loving until they finally have to love you back. And for us, as I said, it was 10 years when she went away to college and she wasn't living in the house anymore. And I think, you know, sometimes absence does make the heart grow fonder, and I think she realized at that time when I would come up for Mom's weekends and Larry wouldn't come with me, it was really some of the first times that we had alone as a young adult and an older adult, and it was during those times that she figured out, hey, you know, she's really not so bad, because we finally didn't have Larry in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Callie, what advice do you have for step families? And you prefer the term step family to blended family?
Well, that's not really my preference, but it is the preference of the National Step Parenting Association, so I try to go along with their guideline. Blended family, I'm not sure what their beef is with that, but step family certainly is their preferred phrase, and I think, you know, maybe it's because when the blending process can often feel like a Cuisinart.
Yeah,
it doesn't conjure up such positive images, and I can certainly say that's how ours felt. But you asked for some tips, and I have, you know, what I call the six step parenting do's and don'ts. Which you want first, the do's or the don'ts?
Well, we just have about a minute before break.
Well, how about we come back to those from the break, and I'll just give the one clear thought that I would offer if you're not in a step family is think about it, because step parenting isn't for sissies.
Step parenting is not for sissies.
And you know that firsthand.
That's for sure.
And so people who are in a happy, healthy marriage might want to take steps to stay that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And that's one of the key, that's the whole thing that we're about, is trying to keep families together.
Absolutely. Well, Callie, hang on. We will be right back in 2 minutes.
Okay.
Well, that's nice. That's nice comeback music. Thank you, Paul. Well, I tell you what, it's 17 minutes past the hour, and it was about a year ago that we were in the living room of the Schneiders, and we were talking with Callie and Elizabeth Schneiders, and, you know, just everything, you would have never known at that particular time that they had any problems at all up to that point.
No, Elizabeth and Callie were laughing and giggling and excited about the launch of this book because they knew it would help families like theirs. So, Callie, you were going to give us some do's and don'ts for step families.
Yeah, in fact, since the book is really much more of a how-not-to book than a how-to book, where I share all of the mistakes I made, why don't we start with the don'ts?
Okay.
And the first don't is don't compare. And by comparison, I mean, for the step-parent, don't compare yourself to the birth parent. Realize that you have your own unique gifts to offer. And I think comparison is tied to expectation, that we come in expecting something, and when it doesn't happen, we become quickly disillusioned. And part of the reason for that is that we don't discuss the nitty-gritty before getting into it, like when we all get married, who's going to cook, and what are we going to do about holidays, and what is my role as a stepmom? Do you want a friend, or do you want asking the birth parent? Do you want really want a co-parent, or do you just want a cheerleader to cheer you on in your own parenting? And when we start to compare ourselves to what the birth mother would be like, that was my problem in this case. I didn't add up, and Elizabeth was comparing me to her, and I didn't measure up in her mind, and it really caused some problems. So my thoughts about how to keep from comparing is to keep the expectations low and the hopes high, and that can diffuse some of the tension.
Yeah, you didn't know that Elizabeth was looking for a mom to bake cookies and be home after school.
No.
And if you had known that, you might have baked more cookies.
Well, or at least I would have bought some. Because, you see, that really was the problem. Her mother was a very nurturing elementary school teacher type. And Elizabeth had conjured, she had her daddy to herself for 5 years, and she'd conjured up this image of what I would be like. And it was somewhere between a mixture of June Cleaver, Claire Huxtable, Mother Teresa, and you know, Martha Stewart, and the poor girl got Judge Judy.
Well, and I think one of the things that's important to mention, too, is if we haven't already, is that Elizabeth's birth mother had passed away.
Yes, she died when Elizabeth was three, and that was the reason why she had her daddy to herself for 5 years. Thank you for mentioning that, Scott. I sometimes forget that our listeners don't know all that.
Well, and we visited, so you're just, you know, that's one of those things that's like, oh, by the way. But that certainly sets up, you know, the point that, like you said, she had 5 years of daddy to herself, totally undivided attention, and then, you know, you were just thought you were signing up to get married.
Hey, but these things happen in families of divorce,
too. Oh, sure
too.
They do.
So, yeah, so what are some other don'ts, Callie?
Well, the other don't is don't compete. Don't compare and don't compete. The competition came in when Elizabeth and I were both trying to compete for Larry's attention at the same time. It seemed that, you know, we each needed to be reassured that we were loved. And so one of the suggestions that I could give a step-parent is if you reassure the child that you're not there to steal the parent's love and that it wouldn't be possible anyway, and that's certainly not your intention, you can sort of relieve some of the fears. And one way that you can do that specifically is to encourage the parent and the child's relationship. Give them time to be by themselves. Don't think you have to be involved in everything they do, so that they can see that you're going to not only permit but encourage them to keep their special time together.
All right. Any do's?
Sure. But let me give you the last don't.
Oh, okay.
The most important don't of all, don't quit.
Ah, yeah.
Now, the do's. It's real. I'll give them all three at once, and then we can talk about them. Do blend, do bond, and do bless.
Okay.
The blending part, the biggest tip I can give is go slow. The step-parent forgets that they are interjecting themselves into a relationship that already exists. And if they try to come in too fast and too strong, that's where the problems are going to come in. As far as a bonding tip, the biggest mistake I made was not doing this. And you need to connect before you correct. I came in with a book of rules and the way things should be, and nobody appreciated that.
And I don't think anybody would, no matter how old you are.
Well, certainly. And yet, you know, the mistake that I made was thinking that they wanted a mom role, a parent role that had been missing there. And really, at the beginning, that's not what anybody wanted. They wanted me to be more like a beloved aunt that just loves the child but keeps her mouth shut as far as correction until you start to, you know, they feel that you're a part of the group and they see how much you love them before they see how much you want to change them. And then, of course, the last one is the most important one, do bless. And how do you bless? Well, you find the gifts that the child has to offer rather than finding the faults.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to us about how you compared yourselves to Cinderella.
Well, we all kind of compared ourselves. That was the problem. Elizabeth and I both thought we were Cinderella.
Nobody was.
Nobody was the wicked stepmom.
There were no wicked stepmothers. No, no. But Elizabeth... because of her deep bond with her dad for those 5 years, even though she wanted a mother, certainly problems were that I wasn't the kind of, you know, being a corporate businesswoman that never even babysat and didn't know how to bake the cookies that she wanted, I wasn't the kind of woman that she wanted as her mom. But even so, she wasn't willing to give up some time with her dad in order to get those needs met. And that's where the problems came in. She thought she could push me down into the dungeon and just summon me when she wanted a ride to the mall or money or wanted her laundry done.
Well, Callie, just about the time you and Elizabeth were starting to just have a wonderful relationship and really appreciate each other, she started having signs of a terrible disease.
Yes. She, while away at college... she was a college cheerleader, and at one point the coach said she needed to maybe lose 5 pounds because some of the boys that were to lift these girls up on their hand weren't as beefy as the boys the year before, and that she might make it easier for them if she were to lose about 5 pounds. But she was 5 pounds of solid muscle, and she really didn't need to lose weight, and that set her into a terrible downward spiral with the horrible disease called anorexia. And
Did you have any idea, Callie? I mean, what was your first clue that this might be going on?
Well, when she was home for the summer, the biggest clue is that she began a aggressive exercise program. And she would run 3 times a day in 100-degree heat here in Dallas and eating only broccoli.
Oh.
And the weight just began to fall off tremendously fast. And by the time she went back to school, when the summer break was over, I was already terrified. And Larry made her promise she would lose no more weight. And when by the time we saw her in September, when she came back to Dallas to cheer at the SMU game, she was frighteningly thin.
So what did you do, Callie?
Well, finally, the coach told her she wouldn't be allowed to cheer anymore, and that's when he sent her to the team doctor who diagnosed her, and then the doctor called Larry, and then we found a treatment center, and we were in and out of that treatment center for the next 3 years. She spent a total of 6 months over a three-year period getting counseling and nutrition and psychological profiling and all kinds of things, a full team of people during her hospitalizations to give her the tools she needed to battle this horrible mental disease. People don't realize it is a mental disease because we all think it's about eating, but it's really about control and the person feels for whatever reason that their life is spinning out of control and they're desperately trying to gain the control. The only thing they think they can control is what they eat.
Callie, we have about a minute before we need to take another break. Can you give us some, as parents, some signs and symptoms to look for?
Yeah, first off, the worry if they start to isolate. They start withdraw from their friends. If they certainly change eating patterns, start to refuse to eat certain foods that they always liked, or extreme exercise, those would be some things to really, and particularly if they're in a sport that has any kind of weight, even wrestling for boys.
Well, Callie, the story takes a dark turn. We're going to go there when we come back. But then there's a wonderful, wonderful story of God's love and God's grace. And we know that you will take us through it. So hang on, everybody, to hear the rest of this incredible story.
You're a little piece of heaven. You're a golden ray of light. And I wish I could protect you from the worries of this life. But if there's one thing I could tell you, it's no matter what you do, hold to Jesus, he's holding on to you. The world will try to tell you that might is more.
It's 30 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Mornings with Scott and Lori.
Well, Callie Schneiders joins us this morning, and with the help of her daughter, Elizabeth, they wrote the book, You're Not My Stepmom. And it's a terrific book about overcoming the many obstacles of being a stepparent. Now, one of those obstacles was a stepdaughter who was dealing with anorexia. The story, unfortunately, did not end with the book. And this morning, Callie Schneiders joins us with the difficult final chapter of daughter Elizabeth's life.
Callie, when we were with you a little over a year ago, Elizabeth and you were preparing for a big wedding.
Yes, last year was really one of the most exciting and amazing years of all of our lives, Larry, Elizabeth, and I. And as you mentioned in April, the book, if you'll forgive me correcting you, Scott, the title of the book is You're Not My Mom. And I believe you said you're not my stepmom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I just didn't want to.
Yeah, you are.
Step was on his brain.
Yeah. No, I understand totally. But the reason why it's called You're Not My Mom is because that's the phrase that every step parent hears.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we were very excited in April when the book came out, and we spent a lot of time together traveling around the country and doing interviews like this together. And actually, this is the first interview I've done without her. That was an exciting time. And then in June, she graduated. We went to Colorado to watch her receive her diploma, where she received her MBA, and it was all working up towards the big wedding on October the 15th. And the planning was underway, and we were really all just terribly excited about Elizabeth marrying Zach. He was such a champion for her and stuck with her through the three hospital stays, all through their college together. And we thought, if there are ever two kids that join in marriage and have already lived up to the in sickness and in health portion, it would be Zach and Elizabeth. And so when the wedding took place, we were thrilled and excited, and it was a beautiful, beautiful ceremony.
And you thought that Elizabeth was cured from anorexia?
Well, yes, we did. And because when she went away to Denver, she was at her 100% of her target weight. And she remained physically, what appeared to us to be physically healthy all the time that she was in Denver and leading up to the wedding. And Zach had told her that they were not going to get engaged until he was assured that she was healthy. And she certainly appeared to be. But as the wedding began to draw near, I know that there is always a lot of attention on all these wedding books, bride books that she was reading about losing those pounds before the wedding day.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that contributed to her return to anorexia. And as she grew nearer and nearer and nearer to the wedding day, she was losing more and more and more weight.
So, Kelly, you're saying a lot of the images, just the images from the wedding books and things, were certainly influencing her?
Well, certainly the images, because, you know, the models are always usually very, very thin that model the wedding gowns. But also, in all of the bride books, almost every single one of them, there would be an article about how the bride can lose that little bit of weight that they want to lose.
You know what someone told me when I was getting married is the nervous energy will cause you to lose weight in ways that you never imagined. And that was true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was certainly, I don't know what it was in her case beyond the restricted eating, but we do know that was going on. And after the wedding, and the thing that was surprising to us, one of the things that you were asking for tips for parents, things to recognize, is that they're usually in denial. They deny that they're losing weight, or they deny that they've lost too much weight. And that was what tricked us, because she acknowledged that she knew she was losing too much weight, that she was going to take steps to correct that she didn't like the way she looked in her gown. We were terrified we were going to have the gown altered at the last minute, but thankfully it had a corset, kind of a tying mechanism, and so we didn't have to destroy the gown to make it fit her, but you could, just looking at her, you could tell she'd lost too much weight. And by Christmas time, when the kids came to Dallas for Christmas, we could tell she'd lost even more, and we sat down and had a real heart-to-heart and said, you've been promising that you were going to take steps, and Elizabeth, you're not taking those steps. We see you losing more and more weight. And
Well, Kelly, were you fearful at all as this, you know, going into this wedding that something like this might be triggered?
I wasn't in the beginning, but by the time that you and Lori were here visiting with us, I was starting to get concerned. And we talked about it, and that's what I said. She was one of the horrible things about this disease is that it's a lie, and the disease lies to them, and then they lie to us. And so Elizabeth was lying to us in telling us that she intended to get back with a counselor and with a nutritionist and to begin the process of putting the weight back on. She didn't intend to do that, but when your child is an adult, you can't force them. You force them to get the treatment. We just hoped that she really meant what she said, and unfortunately she didn't. The disease had too strong of a hold on her, and while she was telling us she didn't want to, and I do think that there's a part of them that doesn't want to lose the weight, but they realize, I believe Elizabeth no longer could do the healthy things. It was as though she was trapped, in many ways, the way other people are trapped in their addictions. She was addicted to this restrictive eating.
And Callie, we just did a little bit of research on anorexia, and the years they go with starving their brain and dehydrating their bodies, they actually think a little bit differently.
Well, they come to the place where they can no longer think rationally, and that's what happened. Her brain was so depleted of its abilities to think rationally and reasonably. And Elizabeth, we didn't realize it at the time, but she was in such intense emotional pain over. She realized that she looked frightening, and yet she couldn't come to terms with that she would have to live in a body that she couldn't stand in order to be healthy in the world.
So what happened, Callie?
Well, she, as I said, came to the place where she couldn't. She no longer believed that she could beat this disease.
And you got some really bad news on Christmas Eve.
Well, it was actually New Year's Eve, and she, in a very misguided act to try to spare her new husband and Larry and I additional pain of going back into a treatment center that she believed would only prolong the inevitable, she took her own life.
Kelly, that's tough news, and it wasn't that long ago, and you've got a good news for us.
Well, the good news is that for any parent that's suffering the loss of a child, and as we all know, how many times have we heard that is one of the most difficult things that any human being will ever have to face, and it certainly has been. But at the same time, God has been with us, and He has brought Larry and I closer together rather than tearing us apart, which is usually one of the side effects of a death of this nature. And so Larry and I have united in our desire to help people who are other families who are suffering from this disease, and of course, to honor Elizabeth's contribution to this book, we certainly want to continue to help step families. And we have a wonderful son-in-law who was, I guess, Elizabeth's final gift to us, and he has certainly been a blessing. And yet at the same time, it causes us such pain to know that how he has been hurt in this process.
Well, Callie, we got to take one of those breaks again,
sure.
And we want you to hold on because there's more to the story. We want to hear about some amazing things that have happened in your life in just the few short months since Elizabeth's death, and we just love you and appreciate you sharing this story.
I'll be right here when you come.
Okay, stay with us. Thank you, Callie. You stay with us, too. You're listening to Mornings with Scott and Lori. We'll be right back.
Glory and grace. To everyone who's lost someone they love, long before it was their time, you feel like the days you had were not enough when you said goodbye. And to all of the people with burdens and pains keeping you back from your life, you believe that there's nothing and there is no one who can make it right. And there is hope for the helpless, rest for the weary, and love for.
You know, hope, that's really what this story is all about, and God providing that. It's 43 minutes past the hour on Mornings with Scott and Lori.
We're talking with Callie Schneider. She's a Christian author and Christian speaker. She is the co-author of the book, You're Not My Mom. Callie, Scott and I were so sad when we heard about Elizabeth's death because she was so charming and we enjoyed our time with her when we were there last year so much. And I knew that you would find purpose and you would find a ministry in all this, but I thought it would take years. And that's one reason we didn't invite you to be on Mornings Right Away. But then when you and I visited a couple of months ago, you told me some of the amazing blessings that have happened in your life in the few short months since Elizabeth's death. Can you share some of those with our listeners?
Well, one of the amazing things is that God immediately led us to a grief support group. And the man and wife that happened to run that grief support group had a daughter that had anorexia and a son that had a bipolar disorder and had made some suicide attempts. And so they were so able to minister to us, and he, from a medical position, was able to help us to come to terms with mentally what had happened to Elizabeth and physically what had happened to her, until we really began to understand that he that she was not capable of making a better choice and better decision. And further, we were led to personal counselor after the grief support group ended, and the personal counselor that my husband found, we each were going to have separate ones, and he found his own, and he had all these amazing criteria, and I thought, well, we'll never find one, and almost miraculously, and one of the, just to give you an example, one of the criteria was that this person be less than 5 miles from home. That was and be in our network and have experience with eating disorders and post-traumatic stress and all the things that we were coping with. And this the man that he found has helped him, and I have watched my husband who grieved the whole during all of our marriage up into this death for his wife, and yet would not get counseling, had not received grief counseling, and yet when Elizabeth died, he the very first thing he said is, "I can't possibly get enough counseling," and was very willing. He said, "I won't give you any pushback on this, and I know it's going to be necessary if we're going to save this marriage, and I'm very committed to doing that." And from the time he started going to the counselor, I just watched a miracle happen, and he has come further in these 7 short months of her from her death than he came in 15 years in trying to grieve his wife's death without the help. And so I've watched a miraculous transformation in my husband. And to be perfectly honest, I feared that Elizabeth's death would be the end of our marriage, because I never believed my husband would be able to return mentally, emotionally, in any kind of way, back to the man that I married. And I've watched it happen in such a very, very short time, and it's truly been a miracle.
Hey, Callie, can I just back up one thing? There was something you said that kind of caught my attention,
yeah.
And you said that when you went to the, I believe the doctor that you were meeting with, that he basically helped you realize that Elizabeth was unable to make those decisions. And was that important to you because of the blame game aspect of this, that nobody blame themselves or each other for her death? Is that why that was important?
Well, there were several reasons. That certainly, and just no, you know, there's such a pain in your heart that you were unable, in all that we tried to do in all of those years, to release her from the pain that would drive her to such a desperate end.
Mm-hmm.
And we who don't understand chemicals and how the brain works, it was very important that we come to understand that the brain was chemically altered by the way that she was eating, and that it was as though the way it was described, it would be like an engine or something, and all somebody had just randomly come and pulled out spark plugs.
Mm.
And so the connection from the brain to the
right.
Thought process was destroyed, and she could not make the proper decisions. And so that was very important for Larry to hear. You know, he has worshipped in a place that has said at one time that to take one's own life is an unpardonable sin. And he needed to hear from a medical doctor and also from a priest that she was not in her right mind and she would not be held responsible for that decision. And that is what enabled him to know for a certainty, in fact, that our daughter, who had committed her life to the Lord in high school, was now with the Lord, and there was no reason for us to doubt it.
And Kelly, you've got a story that makes you think that maybe she is speaking to you from heaven, and we'd like to hear that when we return from this break.
Oh, wow.
You are listening to Mornings with Scott and Lori and Kelly Schneiders today.
Past the hour. Callie Schneiders joins us this morning. And Callie, we just want to thank you for sharing this story with us. I know it's difficult to recall everything, but you know what? At the same time, it's so important that people understand that anorexia is a disease, and that, what were you telling me, Lori, that up to 30% of it?
Yeah, Callie, you may want to correct me, but I think I read somewhere that 30% of anorexics commit suicide?
That's actually a little bit higher. The statistic is that 20% of everyone that is stricken with the disease will not survive it, but 10% of the 20% is because they take their own life out of the desperation of trying to get themselves free and believing they can't.
Oh, and Scott wants to go beat up the coach who told Elizabeth to lose 5 pounds.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just culturally, that's exactly, I mean, our kids are faced with that. You know, that everything's image, 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 thin, thin, thin. And the same coach that told her to lose 5 pounds told her he was going to drop her from the team if she didn't gain weight. I mean, it's, you know, that again, and it's a blame game thing, and, you know, we forgive. But, wow, I don't know how you guys ever, you know, didn't go after
it. I think maybe that you're a walking miracle, Callie.
Well, it would do no good to blame. And I don't think any one thing ever causes a thing like this. What I believe is that Elizabeth had a hole in her heart that formed the day her mother died. And she tried to fill that hole with many things. And one of her ways of honoring her mother was to be a big achiever and to follow her mother's footsteps and become a college cheerleader as her mother was. And the thought of not being able to cheer, I sincerely believe Elizabeth would rather die than not be able to cheer. And so this anorexia had stolen so much from her. And I, again, cautioning parents, particularly if their kids are in sports such as gymnastics, diving, which Elizabeth was in both of those before the cheerleading, all of those sports where weight is an issue, you don't know what these coaches are saying to the kids. And so just be very careful and watch for any signs and act immediately. Don't delay if you think that something might be going on. Get a psychological profile done.
Callie, we only have about 3 minutes left in our program today, and we want to try to end on a positive note. And I know that you and Larry have been encouraged by the things that have happened to you when you've been able to speak about this.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I think you were wanting me to share that Mother's Day story, and I will briefly, but before I do, if you don't mind, so I don't forget to do it, I did want to give the website, stepmom.com, if anyone wants to read more about the step-parenting issues. And there is an 800 number they could call, which is 800-366-7788, if they wanted to purchase a book to get some help for their stepfamily. But as you say, the miracles and the things that God has done, one of them was on Mother's Day, which, as we all know, anniversary dates are very difficult to get through. And it turned out that I had a speaking engagement on Mother's Day weekend, and was concerned about how I was going to get through it. And they had a 30-minute warm-up band before I was to begin to speak, and the song that they sang right before I had to speak was Remember Me.
Mm.
And I was the location of the speech was also significant, but because before I went to Florida to do the speech, Larry had had a dream that Elizabeth and Zach and I and he were in the car, and we were in Denver, and Larry, Zach, and I were in the front seat, and Elizabeth was in the back where we couldn't see her, but we could hear her. And she said, "Oh, Dad, you've got to go up this mountain. I want to show you this beautiful mansion." And Larry was afraid, and because the road was treacherous, and he kept looking out saying, "I don't know if I can make it." And he said, "What do you think, Zach?" And Zach said, I think you can. Just keep going." So when I asked him what he thought about that dream, and he said that it was as though Elizabeth, as the Lord has promised, we will all have a home when we are in heaven with him, and that Elizabeth was trying to share that with us and let us see where she is and to see the mansion that she now sees.
Wow.
And so when I went to Florida, I was speaking at the La Mar-a-Lago Club, which, if you don't know what that is, it's owned by Donald Trump, and it's the former mansion of Meriwether Post, who was the granddaughter of the Post family. And it is truly an amazing piece of real estate and a mansion by any definition. And as I sat there in this mansion and this group was singing Remember Me, it was dawning on me that dream that here we all sat, these 400 women and I, on this Mother's Day weekend, looking at this mansion and everyone oohing and aahing, and it dawning on me that Elizabeth is seeing a mansion that so far surpassed that one day Larry and I will get to see. And so I got up to give the speech, which I did, and when I finished, normally I'm very buoyed and upbeat, but I think because of the Mother's Day thing, I was not as in high spirits as I usually am after giving a speech. The note was, when I got home that night, there was a scripture that I read that said, "I am buoyed by your upbeat nature and your ability to continue to worship our Christ."
Oh, Callie, that's a wonderful way to end our program today with a spiritual vitamin. We appreciate you so much sharing your amazing story of love and recovery.
Thank you, Callie.
Everybody, go out and make it a great day.